He's got the stars and bars and some battle scars. Man, this man's alright. He could cut you to size with his cold blue eyes, and you can hear his voice late at night. Well, I know some have heard the stories, and others said he's got no soul. Ah, come on now, whoever said that don't know the same man I know. Well, they come from deep in the bayou, down around Pontchartrain. He's got a pet rattlesnake that he keeps up by the lake. He's the protector of the fire and flame. Well, I know some have heard the stories, and others said he's got no soul. Ah, come on now, whoever said that don't know the same man I know. So you've heard that he wore a robe in the KKK. Ah, come on, man, that was 30 years ago today. He's a man on a mission and a man on a crusade. He's a man on a mission for the nation and the U.S. of A. He's got the stars and bars and some battle scars, but man, this man's alright. He could cut you to size with his cold blue eyes. Well, he probably won't, but he just might. Well, I know some have heard the stories, and others said he's got no soul. Ah, come on now, whoever said that don't know David Duke at all. They don't know David Duke at all. They don't know Mr. Duke at all.
And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world. Well, maybe more people are getting to know me. I certainly hope so. So here we go into the new show. I hope you're ready. We've got a lot to talk about this Sunday. It's our favorite day of the week. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. We've got a lot of emails. We have a lot of posts. We have a lot of information to go out to you, and a lot of things to discuss of vital importance to Europeans and European people of European descent, wherever they may dwell on the earth. I've been working. I seem to work every day. This Sunday is no different, and I've been doing a lot of work on the. We have what we call inkjet presses and our printers, and we also have laserjet printers. I'm getting ready our next mailing for the Duke Report. We're sending out new Euro membership cards, and we're designing the labels for the VHSs for the conference. The DVDs are produced professionally. In a lot of a great number. That's one reason why it's so expensive to produce them. But the conference DVDs are really coming out great, and I've been making VHS copies. We have a pretty good copy duplication system here, and we've been printing the labels for the VHS cartridges and the VHS spine. And so we've been busy. Also, we've got some new membership cards for Euros. So if you're not a member yet, join. And if you are a member, you've got a new card coming in the mail. Probably the end of this week to the beginning of next week, you should receive it. We have two categories of membership in Euro. We have principal members, or those that are sustaining or basically make the organization go. Their dues are $100 a year. We do the dues in Euro by the calendar year. And if you join any time during the year, that's just considered your membership fee or your membership application fee. And then at the calendar year, the next year, your dues are, again, encouraged to be remitted. If you're a regular member, it's only $25, and that's $25 a year, not a month. It's certainly not an onerous membership fee. But we do hopefully expect most of our members to really contribute to this cause. People give money for a lot of reasons. They give money to, for instance, for the welfare of animals, which I certainly wholeheartedly agree with, or the welfare of children, or the treatment of disease, or cancer research, or you name it. But ladies and gentlemen, I don't think there's any more important task, any more important problem, any more vital problem than literally securing our own existence as a people. And that is what we face when everything else is cut away, when the chaff is beaten away at the side of the Niagara Falls of media garbage. When all that's cut away, the bottom line is this. Our people, the people of European descent on this planet, are dying. Yes, we're dying. Our birth rate right now is 1.25, which means we lose about 40% of our population with every generation, ladies and gentlemen. To replicate yourselves or to continue your numbers, you have to have a population growth of a little bit more than 2.1 or so, because, of course, you're always going to have attrition with disease, at least a 2.1, maybe 2.2, population rate. That's per couple. Obviously, you have a man and a woman, and if they have two children, then they replicate themselves. However, if any of those children die young or they don't have children, they can't replicate themselves. So the actual replication of keeping a population stable is probably more like around 2.2, maybe even 2.3, depending on the society that we live in. We are in a situation, ladies and gentlemen, where our population negative impact today is 1.25, which basically means, again, we are losing our population of around 40% each generation. Now, there's no such population problem in Asia. There's 1.3 billion Chinese. There's huge numbers. There's billions and billions of Indians. You know, and why are we trying to lessen their problems, bringing them here to America? Is that going to solve our problem? There are billions and billions of Indians. There are billions of brown people around the world. Billions of we can just go on and on. I mean, blacks certainly. And if you look at the reproduction rate in the United States of America, the highest reproduction rates are indeed African Americans and Mexicans, and they're very much higher than any other segment of the population. So this demographic change has dire and serious consequences for Western man. I mean, absolutely dire consequences for our people. First off, most Western nations live in and endorse a principle of government called democracy, or the idea is that the majority rules. That if the majority of the people want something, that's what should happen. Of course, we haven't really been a true democracy for many, many years. The majority of the American people are opposed to keeping our borders open, for instance, and yet still they come. The majority of the people in this country want to enforce our laws on the borders, and yet still our government doesn't do what's necessary. The majority of our people in this country have never wanted forced housing. They never wanted forced integration of education. They've never wanted so-called affirmative action, which is nothing less than a discrimination against white people, better qualified white people. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not here in this program telling you that we should have all these programs of discrimination and oppression against blacks or any other minority. In fact, I believe in freedom, and I believe in our country that we should have equal rights for all, meaning that the best qualified person should get the job, promotion, scholarship, whatever else they're entitled to by their merits. I do believe that down the line that we need to produce a society, create a society. And by the way, this is a very casual show, as you heard my very brave watchdog there in the background. This is a casual program. It's kind of like me sitting in your living room on the couch talking with you, or maybe sitting in the passenger side while you're driving in your car. I want this to be laid back, and I want us to have a simple conversation about some of the critical issues. The one different ingredient about this program as compared to many other radio programs is the fact that we're online at the same time. That is, you have interaction on this program. And not simply the interaction of someone who calls up and gets heard on the radio like some talk shows, but where you can actually post everyone who wants to can post on Town Hall. And that's on the stormfront.org website, stormfront.org, if you're not there already. And, of course, you can go to davidduke.com and send me an email at info1@davidduke.com. That's info1@davidduke.com. So this is interactive radio. And we've had well over 500,000 views already on the Town Hall forum on Stormfront. So not only will your views be heard by me and read by me and thought of by me and answered by me, but also other people will have a chance to see and to read your views for themselves. So it's a fantastic opportunity, and it's a great medium for communication that we have. Anyway, so, you know, getting back to it, what it really boils down to, ladies and gentlemen, is that we're in a literal struggle for our survival. Because this majority, this non-European majority, will completely transform both the culture, the economy, the government, the tax structure, the laws and regulations of society. You can imagine the differences that will be a vote. I'll give you an example this way. Now, as you all know, I am totally opposed to the so-called World War IV. I want to de-escalate this struggle between European mankind and the Christian West and the forces of Islam. We've had wars and conflicts, obviously, in the past, in the centuries past. No question about it. They've invaded us. We've invaded them. But we've had a pretty good detente, except for some skirmishes on the border areas, over the last few hundred years. I don't want to see this war escalate. I think it will be a tragedy to our people. And I feel a great deal of sympathy to the idea that Islamic people, wherever they are in the world, have a right to practice whatever religion, faith, value system, government that they so desire. I don't think it's the place, the United States of America, to be the policeman of the world. I think as well that I think it was an absolute atrocity and a criminal act, really, for the United States of America to support this criminal nation of Israel. We were accessories to a crime. And the Israelis dispossessed the Palestinian people. They destroyed, you know, their culture, their heritage. They've tortured hundreds of thousands of them over the years. They've killed tens of thousands of their children. They have committed genocide against them. They have oppressed them brutally in the last 35 years. They are the country with the real weapons of mass destruction. They are the country who truly has been the greatest enemy of the United States of America. In fact, the only nation in the United States, in the world, excuse me, the only nation in the world that has terroristically attacked, as a government, attacked our country. And I know that must sound strange to a lot of new listeners, but that's exactly the way it is. Israel, in the Levant affair, sent their agents to bomb American libraries, American cinemas, American meeting places in Egypt in a false flag operation to attempt to blame the attack on the Egyptians and get us into the war that was waging between Israel and Egypt at the time. It was a dastardly thing, and in fact, it would have killed many people, except for the fact that we were lucky enough to defuse it and catch the terrorists on the way to do some of the bombing. Some of the bombings had taken place already. They were on their way to another bombing, and one of their bombs prematurely exploded, and the whole plot unraveled. Later, the Israeli defense minister resigned. He didn't resign because he attacked the United States. That wasn't his problem. He resigned because they failed in the mission. They were discovered. It wasn't successful. That was the great shame. In fact, the Israeli president recently honored the Jewish Israeli terrorists who attacked American installations with terrorist bombs. That's right. This happened just a month and a half, 2 months ago, I guess it is now. The Israeli government formally, the president of Israel formally recognized the terrorist attackers, Israeli terrorist attackers who tried to attack American installations and destroy American lives and property, and in fact, even more treacherously, involve us in an entire war with an innocent nation, Egypt, which would have cost how many lives and how many billions of dollars? One of the worst acts of treachery that any nation could commit against another. That's supposed to be an ally? The attack on the USS Liberty, oh, they keep trying to say it was a mistake. But let me tell you something. The Secretary of State of the United States at the time, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time, Secretary of Navy at the time, and the men who served in that boat, who saw the situation, who saw the Israeli reconnaissance planes come in for hours before the attack and fly low enough that they could see the expressions on the pilots' faces, the American the American flag was flying fully, and it was a very clear day and windy day, in fact, in the Mediterranean, and the flag was totally unfurled. And that's what they say. The Israelis say, no, it was a mistake. I mean, that's their excuse. Their problem was that the Americans on this ship were so courageous and so resourceful in the midst of this napalm being dropped upon their decks and torpedoes fired at them and machine gun, 50 caliber machine gun fire racking the decks. Very brave American sailors were able to rig and gerrymand an antenna and send out messages to the Sixth Fleet, identifying the attackers. And, ladies and gentlemen, that is what made them break off the attack. That's what made the Israelis break off the attack unsuccessfully. In other words, they wanted to sink the ship and kill everybody aboard and blame it again on Egypt. And, of course, you had the Jonathan Pollard case. This man committed more mayhem, more damage probably to our intelligence networks than any spy maybe in American history. Many people think he did more damage than what even the Rosenbergs did. And not only that, not only did he steal this top-secret data to Israel. I mean, he didn't pass it to the Soviets, but the Israeli government passed it to the Soviets. They traded it. They bartered it for some other sort of consideration. That's what you call an ally, ladies and gentlemen, right? And now AIPAC, which is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, they absolutely are involved and embroiled in an espionage scandal against the United States of America. And it got a little press the first couple of days, and now it's got the Deep Six treatment, and there's very, very little talk about this in our media. But you've got to understand who controls the media, who runs the media in this country. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are in a situation where we are losing our heritage, we're losing our very existence, and when we become a minority. And by the way, I must say this before I go on to more of this subject. This minority status, this change in immigration that's made this change in terms of the numerical dominance of the Europeans in America, this change has come about almost entirely. It has been driven by the so-called Jewish supremacists. There's no question about it. I can prove that from the very earliest days, the effort to change our immigration was driven by their money, by their funds, and by their influence in the media. It is their media, their Hollywood media, that's always quoting, celebrating diversity, celebrating multiculturalism, telling us how much we are going to be enriched by this, by the millions and millions of non-Europeans that are flooding into our country. Will you tell that to the gentleman who's in a neighborhood somewhere in California or Arizona or even Arkansas today that's now being overrun by Mexicans, where children are being held up for money, where the schools are shambles, where the tax base is destroyed because they're overrunning the tax base in terms of the medical treatment in the county and the other needs of the county. I mean, you tell that to the individual who now walks on a dirty street where he once walked in a clean and pristine street. You tell that to the individual who cannot use his public schools in many areas of the United States, can't even use them anymore, wouldn't dare send their children to a public school. The schools that this individual and his wife pay for with their hard-earned tax money, and then they can't turn around and use it. Yeah, they've been enriched. Tell that to the 1,700,000 victims of black violent crime. And of that number, 90% are white victims of black violent crime. That's interracial crime. ladies and gentlemen, it's just incredible what's going on in the United States of America. And we do indeed face a genocide, an absolute, complete genocide of our people. The massive immigration continues, and the low birth rates continue, and the miscegenation continues. We lose our heritage. We cease to exist as a people, and all the uniqueness and beauty of our people will be lost forever. This fact, this overwhelming fact, was something that I came to recognize as a young man. At first, I resisted it. I didn't want to believe it. In fact, I wanted to believe, even though I had a very strong Southern background, and I loved the Confederate flag and Robert E. Lee. I read a lot as a young man, and they emotionally committed me at a very young age to the, I guess, the liberal ideas about some of these things. I wasn't a person that was out in the streets or anything, but I was basically told that so-called civil rights movement and forced integration of education and opening the borders and all, that this was what our forefathers wanted. In fact, they always tried to make it out that this is what America was really all about, and then if you were patriotic, you would understand that. And then I came across some ideas refuting it, and the first book I read was Carlton Putnam's book, Race and Reason. And I expected to find something of hate and something of intolerance and something of ignorance. And I found something that was written eruditely, intelligently, beautifully, and with love and purpose. This man did just a fantastic job, and he made me begin to think about issues. He didn't convert me, but he made me begin to think about issues. And then slowly I began to understand that even back in those days, in the early 60s, when America was still 90% European American, I realized then that our government was on a path that now we're beginning to see the fruits of. A path of so-called multiculturalism, of breaking down our borders, destroying our American heritage, and involving ourselves in all these wars overseas, totally outside of our interests, in fact, totally opposite our interests. I mean, someone could argue that America was in Vietnam trying to stop the spread of communism, and communism was a worldwide phenomena. But, you know, what we're doing right now in the Middle East is insane, because what we're doing right now is making the entire world hate us viciously and want to kill us. This is not the same as fighting communism. I don't know if we should have been in Vietnam. I was in Laos during the Vietnam War. I worked with the State Department at that time. I instructed anti-communist lotion and arm officers for a while in 1971. And, you know, I was kind of gung-ho for the war when I was very young. But also I began to learn very early on that this war was doing nothing for us, that this war was really, really... Well, you know, Jamie's on the phone dialing my number, but Jamie's not thinking right now. So anyway, he's trying to dial somebody, but he called my line. I don't know why I did that. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, so that's where we're sitting. That's where we're standing. When I learned what was going on, I didn't know quite what to do. All I knew was that I was of European descent, that I loved deeply my people, my heritage. I loved the traditions of what I thought was traditional and classic America, and I wanted to preserve those things. And I found that the Republican Party, to a great extent, was deserting me. In fact, in 64, I supported Goldwater, and he had some good thoughts, I believed, at that particular time. But I became increasingly disenchanted and distrustful of the Republican Party. And, of course, I knew the Democratic Party was in control of our enemies. And then I saw this sellout go on day after day, year after year. And I decided to really get involved in something and just tell the truth the best I knew how to do it. And once I realized the plight our people were in, I realized that my life should be about and would be about trying to preserve our heritage and win our freedom back. I thought it was a great cause, and I know it still is a great cause, and that flame of dedication and belief still burns in me the same way it burned in me as a 13- and 14-year-old young man. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to know that there are so many people out there, so many young 13 and 14 and 15 and 16-year-old young men and women who are educating themselves and learning about what's happening in our society. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to some emails in a moment here. And again, you can email me at info1@davidduke.com. And you can also post, obviously, at stormfront.org, the town hall section. This is from Sir Bradlow. He says, "Hello, Representative Duke. I've heard people sometimes say that there will be a civil war, too. Do you believe this might happen? I personally believe this will not happen, for I've noticed that many whites, for some reason, get off, so to speak, by patronizing minorities, look for ways to kiss up to different groups. Please reply. Thank you." Well, there's certainly no guarantee of any civil war. There's a lot of suggestions that there will be a lot of strife and conflict in the United States of America. But look what happened. I think a perfect model of this is look what happened in South Africa. There were some areas of white resistance, obviously, like in the early days of Kenya is a perfect example. But if you really notice, in Zimbabwe, in the early days, the white government resisted to a degree. But in the early day, but ultimately, there were no great civil wars. I mean, there really wasn't. The Europeans simply did not stand up, and they didn't realize the genocide that was awaiting them. As you know, in Zimbabwe, which is what was Rhodesia, of course, the farmers now are being driven off their land, they're being murdered, and even in South Africa you have a tremendously high murder rate going on of South Africans, white people. And it's a horrible process, and it continues to go on, and the process will continue until just about all the whites are driven from the country. And there was no, quote, civil war. So there's no guarantee of any civil war. But I do think there's going to be strife, and I think there's going to be conflict, and I think that as things grow worse, more and more white people will agree with us. The only problem with that is that more and more white people will lose heart. And we've seen this in the South over the last 20, 30, 40 years of the so-called civil rights movement. As processes became more liberal and schools were forcibly integrated and affirmative action programs went in, more and more whites became opposed to these things because they now experienced the problems associated with it. But the catch-22 is that as they gained power, and mayors and high elected officials and the rest of it, whites lost heart. I mean, they lost their drive. They lost hope of victory. And that's an accompanying problem. But I do believe that as the problems get worse, more it's going to drive more and more white people to an incredible consensus that's going to be on our side. And I think that the time is going to come when we can capitalize on that and we can gain power. Whatever form the revolution takes, and I think the form of revolution is not, I don't think it's going to be a traditional, you know, what you imagine in the comic books and so forth, is a traditional violent revolutionary struggle. In fact, I think that those kinds of actions now are indeed doomed because the government has so many means at their disposal to deal with people who act outside of the law. I think it's absolutely, incredibly stupid at this point to do anything like that. I think it not only does it not help the cause any, I think it hurts the cause vitally, those kinds of actions. But I think the electronic revolution that we've had, the internet revolution we've had, the communication revolution that we've had, is going to give us a tremendous opportunity to literally change the consciousness of so many millions of whites at one time or another. It'll just take a little. It'll just take a little spark, and it's just not going to take. And then when that spark hits, like some sort of an issue or political issue, I think there'll be millions of people in the streets. Not only as you've seen people in Eastern Europe recently in the overthrow of governments, but in America and many other places. and they'll just do general strikes, and the streetcars won't run, and the buses won't run, and the freeways will shut down, and they're just going to demand a change. And I think that's eventually going to come to the United States of America. I think it's going to come to most European countries. But I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. I think we all got to be prepared for the possibilities of minority violence in the future. But there's many legal ways you should prepare for that. And just stay legal in every aspect. If you really want to help the cause, you're going to have to do that for sure. All right, let's see what we've got here. This is from Kevin. He says, Representative Duke, I think you've done a wonderful job in speaking the truth about Israel, the Jewish lobbyist groups, how the media's controlled, and about Jewish supremacism in general. Until recently, I thought you'd gone too far when it came to your criticism of the Talmud. I was listening to one of your speeches over the Internet. I heard you mention 57a getting of the Talmud. I don't even want to repeat what was said about Jesus in that verse, but when I first heard you claim that, I got very upset and thought you'd gone too far and made up a lie or a huge exaggeration just to point out the evils of Jewish supremacism. I was set to write you a letter and say that it doesn't matter if we expose more than 500 previously unknown facts about Jews in Israel. If we make one false statement, it will put doubt in everything else that our movement has said in the past. Well, I finally did my research, did a thorough search on the Internet, and everywhere I looked, I found the same thing. What you said about the Talmud is 100% true. I even found a place where a rabbi tries to defend the Talmud, and in doing so, again, proved your accusations to be true. So I wanted to apologize for doubting you and what you'd said. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Bob Kling, San Francisco Euro supporter. Well, Bob, thanks a lot, and I tell you, I think there's no question in my mind that these things are shocking, and they're so interesting. I think it does drive people somewhat to learn about the truth. And once they learn about these truths, I think that they're kind of compelled to do something about it. It's that dynamic. And by the way, you don't ever have to apologize me for doubting me. I don't mind to be doubted. I think the intelligent man doubts things that he hears, especially when it challenges him, when it's something that counters what he generally understands to be true and what he thinks to be true. So I don't mind anyone doubt. I want people to doubt me. I want people to question me. That's what I couldn't want anything better, because that means that person is really going to research and do the job and find out the whole truth and satisfy himself about what the truth is. And I think that's, you know, I think that's great. I'm glad that you think the way you think. This is Bob again. He also says something about Karl Rove scandal. He says, I wanted to know if you also thought that this whole Karl Rove scandal started with the Jews in Israel. Here are my thoughts. The whole Rove leak comes back to Jews and Israel. The whole story starts with a false story about Iraq buying yellow cake from Niger. The documents that stated that were supposedly forged by Israeli agents, according to Larry Johnson, a CIA analyst. Judith Miller, the New York Times, went to jail because she would not give up her leak. Miller is Jewish. She'd also written a false article about aluminum tubes in Iraq and was pushing the Iraq war in her paper. Scooter Libby, Rove's chief of staff, is also Jewish. He was the one who confirmed to the reporter, Cooper, that he also heard that Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, was an undercover CIA agent and arranged for the Joe Wilson trip to Niger. Libby is a member of the big pro-Israel group Jinsa, and is a longtime friend of Paul Wolfowitz. And according to the, quote, Jewish exponent, it doesn't make sense why Miller would cover up for Rove since they don't run in the same circles, but that insiders say that Libby was actually the original leak, which means Miller is going to jail to cover up for a Jewish friend, Libby. Another coincidence is that RNC Ken Mellman, RNC chairman, Republican National Chairman, who is Jewish, has been the most vocal supporter of Rove. My guess is you won't see this angle on the Fox News anytime soon. Well, that's right, absolutely. And again, there's no way, especially from a conservative point of view. I mean, the liberals are upset, but the conservatives, we're the ones that generally are more upset about these kind of things. The liberals, You know, Bush didn't like the fact that his insane, illegal, anti-American, pro-Israel war wasn't going the way he wanted it to go. He didn't want any criticism. He wanted to squelch criticism. So he and his aides, and we can't be sure that he knew, but we certainly know that his top men knew, and he's responsible for them, obviously, went and exposed an individual who is a CIA agent. Now, I saw the reports on the Fox News Network recently, and just amazing the links they go up to cover to cover up for these traitors and so forth. And what they say is, they say, well, Rove shouldn't be any problem because he didn't actually say her name. He just said it was the wife of of Mr. Wilson. I mean, that, you see, is Talmudic logic to the nth degree. As you probably know, the Talmudic process is about the splitting of hairs. And Christ said it so well when he talked about the Pharisees who were actually the authors of the oral tradition which became the Talmud. And he said, you see these men, he said, they say they're conforming to the letter of the law, but they violate the spirit of the law. And that's exactly it. They have all sorts of ways to get around the truth. You know, we've already just about gone over time, but let me see if there's any more letters, emails, or posts. Let me go to stormfront.org and get that right now. I've got a few more things to do there anyway. There was a little discussion of hate crimes legislation, and Messiah writes, he says, it is why they so desperately need hate crimes legislation and an anti-defamation league to defame anyone who opposes their racist crimes of apartheid and genocidal mass murder. It is why they require and consistently rely on the best intelligence organization in the world, which, when it partners with their own CIA, creates the false flag operations necessary to incite Americans for war, and which has also resulted in the total destruction of our basic human freedoms by way of the Patriot Act, the terrorist acts perpetrated against the United States, and the slaughter of over 3,000 Americans on September 11, 2001. It was just such an operations. Anyway, it's interesting, and here's one from Moadib. He says, changing religion, and he's talking about an individual Jew who converted, does not change ethnicity. The genes aren't changed. A Jew converts to Christianity is no different than a Negro or Chinese that converts. None of them are ethnically white. Your convert is still a Jew, just as the Negro or Chinese convert is still a Negro or Chinese. Interesting. Oh, I've got a lot more posts, and I've got to go to some more pages. I hit last on my browser, didn't always go with the last. All right, let's see. All right. We got a different quote on definitions of the Jew. I don't want to get into that right now. This is from 14, 14, 14, 14, 14. What do you think of the strategy of purchasing land, establishing it on it towns for whites only? This would be a way of creating a white living space. What do you think of the Arania project in South Africa? What's your opinion of following ideologies, liberalism? Libertarianism, despotism, democracy, utilitarianism. Okay, first off, you're not going to be able to establish towns for whites only. They'll put you in jail. There are already laws against that. That's not really going to work. Whites can come together and associate, though, in their own communities, and there's nothing wrong with whites in the cause doing so, but do that. Be separate and secure for your families, but at the same time, don't divorce yourself from your own community. Don't leave your church. Convert your church to your point of view. Don't leave your little organization. Convert them. Don't get thrown out of school because of what you do, but convert your fellow school students and friends and faculty. This is what you've got to do. You've got to be inside there. This is where you've got to, it's good to isolate yourself to a degree so you can have a place that's safe and secure for your family and in a healthy environment. It helps you keep a kind of even frame of mind. But at the same time, go out in the world. Don't leave the world. You need to dedicate yourself to that. The Irania project in South Africa, I don't know. I don't think it's very feasible at this point. You know, if you know, once you lose, it's almost impossible to set up these so-called white homelands or white areas. It's almost impossible to do so because the government power, the military power, is in the hands of the enemies. And they don't want to see that happen. South Africa doesn't want to see some white state show up the whole rest of the African continent. No way in the world. And they'll try to prevent that from happening any way they can. And they absolutely will be opposed to that. I think the same thing is true to a great extent in America. Now, South Africa could have done that. While the whites still had the power in that country, they could have set aside some lands, white-only lands, and, you know, they could have tried to create some sort of geographically defensible borders and move most of their military and their defensive equipment and so forth in that area. Of South Africa could have been a sizable area as well. That could have been done, and that should have been done in South Africa, at least as a fallback. But it really never was done, and I think that's a big mistake. Let's see. This is the question about genetics or religion driving Jews. And Kendrick Mann says, I say both. After Queen Isabella sent the Jews on their way from Spain in 1492, a large number of them converted to Catholicism and remained. These Jews demonstrated how well they survived and operated in a hostile environment for many centuries after. They are largely responsible for the bloodiest 20th century conflict in Spain's history, the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. Now, I'm not trying to shift responsibility from the tens of thousands of Jews swarming into the country under the name of international brigades. Even Bela Kuhn was sent in by Stalin, a major leader of the bloodiest terror against white Christians in Russia and a main organizer of the March 1919 communist revolt in Hungary. Today, the bloody fingerprints of this underground Jewish group are all over on the economy and foreign policy of this country, and the great majority of the locals seem to have little understanding of what is eating their country piece by piece. Anyway, that's an interesting post. And let me go to the next one here. We've got one from Viking. Let's see. I was still talking about those attitudes. I'm going to go forward. Let me go to the next page. Well, I've got a lot of them here. We're real over today, but this is Sunday, and we sometimes do a little bit longer show than usual. I hope you're enjoying it and finding a lot of things of interest here. All right, let's see. This individual talks about crypto-Jews or the Marana Jews of Spain, and this is something that's very interesting, and it shows what goes on. Yes, a lot of the Jews did convert there, but they kept remaining as Jews in secret. And by the way, I even read some of the different ceremonies that they had as Maranos, and they were very, very anti-Christian. But they maintained their secret allegiance to Judaism, even though on the outside they posed and they presented themselves as, you know, devout Christians. And now this is talked about in Jewish books. This is no slander against the Jews. That's for sure. This comes from Cyrus, 1964. He says, you've done the Stormfront readership a great service supplying this quote because it highlights some of the casual issues surrounding Europe's long-running anti-Jewish angst. You will note that the Grand Inquisitor in Spain, Torquemada, himself, a former Jew, was ruthless in his desire to drive the Jews from that country because of the way they tampered with the internal policies of Christianity. Where mainstream Jewry came to grief was trying to Judaize Christianity. That's a major cause of the rift. There were those who did not take kindly to that at all. Anyway, he says, there are other issues surrounding this, but well-known but discreetly kept in Catholic and Orthodox circles, which they have tried to keep a lid on. But if it were fully explained to the world's 1 billion Catholics and Orthodox, in other words, ordinary people, not fanatics, it could give rise to a Fourth Reich as it did the Third. That's why when parishioners peel away from their faith after having a whole spectrum of strange and discomforting data placed in their lap by the local Jehovah's Witnesses, their priests cannot defend their former faith without dredging up the past origins of Christianity. If they did, it could well and truly kick-start the new change. That's why they say, just listen to us, don't ask questions. Just believe us when we tell you this is the way for a reason. These replies, while appearing simplistic and imbecilic, have saved the Jewish arse from a whole world of woe for a long, long time. Or put it another way, Protestants, in other words, ex-Catholics, have long recognized there is something else about Catholicism and Christianity that has never been properly explained to the people. Indeed, there is. Well, that's kind of interesting, and that is from Cyrus, 1994. This is Bob's. This is Friesendahl now, and he quotes Bob's old blog by Bob Whitaker. He says, "I wish to hell people would stop bitching to me how bad things are. A couple middle-aged guys are bitching to me about how affirmative action ruined their lives and careers. I warned about all that 40 years ago. Everybody back then said, oh, and then went on about how busy they were. Today I try to tell people what they should be doing, and they tell me how busy they are. These guys are busy bitching. Moan, sob, cry. God, I get sick of hearing of it. You asked me for this for 50 years. You wanted to give away your country. You had no interest in politics. Now you get mugged in the street. Who cares? Those whining guys today are the exact copies of the generation that caused all the disasters they whine about. They are busy. They got other things to think about, like crying about their fate. They are preparing the disaster for the next generation. Don't blubber in my ear, buddy. There are still a few things I can do, and I don't want to waste the little time I have left with you clowns. The white man has never committed a sin other races have not committed. It's the good things he's done that are unique." Boy, that's a great quote. I love that quote. And Dave Cooper immediately, we're on the same page, David, aren't we? He says, "The white man has never committed a sin other races have not committed. It's the good things he's done that are unique." That's a great deal of wisdom. And Bob, I love that quote. That's a great quote. I'm going to have to borrow that sometime. I'll give you some credit on it, though. Let's see. Viking 1944 says, "I agree. Bela Kun was vicious. But don't leave out the Stalinist commissar, Lazar Kaganovich. Not only exhibited cruelty towards white Christians, but also to gain favor with Stalin, destroyed all churches, the Great Church of the Savior, Holy Week Monastery, along with dozens of ancient churches that were destroyed. And even in the Kremlin itself, several churches dating back to the 15th to 17th centuries were demolished. Kaganovich would ensure that Stalin would be their god. Of the Moscow Bolsheviks, Jewish supremacist Kaganovich stands out. During collectivization in Ukraine in 1930, white middle-class peasants, kulaks, who owned prosperous farms, were the targets of terror. Millions were murdered. Jewish supremacist Kaganovich was ruthless toward those who resisted collectivization." Very true, very much so. Okay, this is from David Fellows. This is at Rogus. "Thanks for your article about black Americans and white Christian evangelicals. I enjoyed the article. You make some good points, and I hope you'll hear from you again soon." And there's a post there on Stormfront. You can see where you can find it. David Fellows writes, he says, "A 22-year-old veteran U.S. congressman exposes Israel's lobby. Representative Paul Finley dares to speak out. Paul Finley served on Capitol Hill for 22 years. During this time, he had many encounters with the Jewish lobby, which exhibited considerable control over congressional decisions with respect to Israel and the Middle East. He speaks of treachery and treason among the highest seats of the land, and how many congressmen put Israel's interest ahead of Americans." It's a great video to free download, or you can purchase as a DVD. It lasts 1 hour and 10 minutes. You can find it here, so you have a version of a DVD for you all. And now I'm going to go to the net. We're moving right along. Too many now. We got a lot here. I'm going to go. I'm not going to take any more of yesterday's. I'm just going to go to the front of the party here. "Representative Duke, there's a lot of grassroots, street-level activism right now in California. Some of these activists use the Roman salute in public of these protests. How can I or we dissuade them from this errant activity?" Well, ladies and gentlemen, listen. Try to avoid any sort of symbols, whatever that the Jewish supremacists, the media, have created an image of, which serves their purposes rather than ours. Why put that barrier up between you and the average person you're trying to reach with the other truths? You know, we can definitely solve the lies and misstatements that exist about the Second World War when we get our own house in order, when we gain power again. And I think all those things will change. But if you're simply going to focus on these aspects of the past, what you're doing is you're helping fulfill why they spent these hundreds of billions of dollars on propaganda on these areas. And if you want to conform to those stereotypes, you're just going to hurt yourself, and it's going to draw a barrier between yourself and the people you truly want to reach. This is from Nordic 2005. I hope that religion isn't out of place here. I'm thinking of this as part of the ongoing television propaganda found in every segment of programming. I don't know if you want me to name the names of clergymen. However, this morning I heard the popular preacher Joel Osteen brag on television about how diverse his church is. He said that God loves this diversity and that where there is grace, there is no race. To me, it's disappointing for impressionable young minds to absorb these ideas. He's also contradicting himself ridiculously in that God loves diversity, and yet there are no races. He stated that there would be diversity in heaven, so we need it here on earth. I have heard, on the contrary, that all believers in heaven will have been transformed in ways that contradict Osteen's statement. Well, of course, the whole idea is insane, you know. God wants us all to be the same in the race mix, and yet every Christian believes that God created the world, and God created nature, and God created the existence of these different races. Did he create this handiwork for us to simply go destroy them? Is that what he was about? Did he create this handiwork, these races, and then separate us by continents? I mean, he was the original segregationist, wasn't he? God was the person. God was the force that segregated the races. Now, you can say God did it, or you can say nature did it. Evolution, if you're a believer in evolution, evolution separated races. In fact, races are created by the fact that different people in different environments who are separate have a different response to the environment or the conditions that exist there, and they develop different characteristics. Race itself is created by geographic separation. So whether you talk about God or whether you talk about nature, you know, either one. When you destroy a race, you're destroying the handiwork of the cosmos. This is Kane 123123. He says, this guy, talking about Joel Osteen, annoys me. I saw one of his sermons too. In this sermon, he was talking about how we should all blindly submit to authority. And the authority is the Israeli lobby, and you are an American. There should be no submission on our part. Absolutely. Well, these preachers, and we're not going to talk about this much, and we're going to call it a day today. This is a much longer show than usual. But these preachers, they're not evangelicals for Christ or Christianity. They're Jewish evangelists. And ladies and gentlemen, that's my signal. I've got to go. We're definitely over time. They're Jewish evangelists, and they're seeking and preaching a worship of Jewish supremacism and Jewish power. And they're behind so many evil things in our society. Are we now supposed to support them? Support this people that are doing so much wrong to this nation and to the world? Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to change. We've got to make some great changes in this planet. I'm committed to doing that, and I hope that you'll join me, and that we'll work together, and we'll find a way to make America strong again. And truly save the heritage and the freedom of Europeans wherever they dwell. Good to be with you. I'll be back with you on Monday. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
This has been David Duke for Our Heritage and Our Freedom.